Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Man, I hope you had a great weekend. I sure did, because I like watching football on television, and I was rewarded for such a non-athletic practice. Also great college hoops. Got a new number one with Kansas, a team that they beat Tennessee earlier this year, and Tennessee took down Gonzaga. Lakers continue to win. Will they add some veteran pieces? We'll get to that upcoming. Man, do we have a tremendous show for you. Tremendous show. Trent Dilfer is going to join us in 15 minutes. Winston Moss, the now former Packers linebackers coach, will join us in an hour. And Michael Lombardi, former NFL GM, wouldn't stun me if he became a member of the Raiders again in the future. Going to join us later on the show. So we got a ton to get to. I'll give you my thoughts on Reggie McKenzie, and I'll give you my thoughts on the Dallas Cowboys. Which to start with? Let's start with McKenzie, but the stories are similar. Here's what we do. We do black and white analysis. Okay? We do right and left politics and black and white analysis. Trades aren't fair trades. They're either good or they're bad. Oh, that's a great trade. It was a terrible trade. There is no fair trades. Right? That would actually be reasonable and have a reasonable sports conclusion. What's amazing about the tenure, short tenure of John Gruden is this assumption that he has no idea what he's doing, that he gave away Khalil Mack, that he gave away Amari Cooper, and that their awesomeness with the Chicago Bears, who beat the LA Rams yesterday, and with the Dallas Cowboys, who beat the Philadelphia Eagles yesterday, only proves that John Gruden is an idiot. Now, there's a multitude of levels to it. The first thing that John Gruden did wrong was had an awesome job. Listen, this is what he truly did wrong. Okay? He had a great job with Monday Night Football. He had been offered a job in college football year after year, a chance to come back to the NFL several times over, and the only way to get a guy out of a dream job or out of a cush job where he could have been there like John Madden 30 years was to overpay him. And the only way in which you'll overpay a guy and get him to believe in a rebuilding job is to overpay him for a long period of time. But because he got a deal which has been reported as, and he said misreported as, $100 million, now all of a sudden John Gruden's the worst. You're the worst. You're making $100 million. Like, hey, dude. Were the Raiders any good last year? Were they any good last year? Nope. But they had Khalil Mack. And by trading away Khalil Mack, they were awful. You know, when they made the playoffs in 2016, they were actually 26 in points allowed per game and 32nd in sacks per game. Khalil Mack was on the team then. Khalil Mack didn't want to be paid. He wanted to be paid above that of anybody who had ever played his position in the NFL for longer than anybody had ever been paid above that position in the NFL. So what Khalil Mack was saying was, hey, I know we suck, but I'm not the reason we suck. And so instead of being part of the process of fixing it, I would like to be overpaid so it makes it harder to fix the problem. You cannot like the John Gruden trade. But John Gruden getting two first-rounders for Khalil Mack was a great trade. And as he told everybody who would listen, the other picks that were exchanged, he had nothing to do with. Who did? Reggie McKenzie. And so to anybody who sits there and goes like, hey, Reggie McKenzie had no draft picks and no money, and he put a team in the playoffs, he did. One time. And when they did, they went for it on fourth down more than any team in the National Football League. Look, Reggie McKenzie hadn't done a great job. He'd been there since 2012. So we're talking 6 years. He got to one playoff. And they were in cap hell, and they hadn't drafted particularly well. Outside of that, you know, yeah, he got Khalil Mack. Yeah, he got Amari Cooper. Did you know Amari Cooper, his rookie season, he led the NFL in drops and drop percentage? Did you know in his second season, he had only four drops all year, but last season, he led the NFL in drop rate percentage again? Like, oh, why did they trade him away? Look, if you want to know, if you want to really tell the gray story, not the, was it a good trade, a bad trade? Because you wouldn't give up a first-round pick for a guy who's going to make $14 million next year, which is a lot of money, considering he led the NFL in drop percentage last year, unless he's a pretty good player. Eagles needed a wide receiver. Wouldn't trade a first-rounder for him. Would only offer a second-rounder. The story is not that Gruden's an idiot or that the Cowboys are geniuses knowing that they needed a number one guy after cutting bait with Dez Bryant. The story is other people didn't value him. The entire league had an opportunity to trade for him, and nobody else offered a first. In this world of black and white, there's a lot of gray, or silver, if you will. And while we're sitting here saying Reggie McKenzie got fired after 6 years, and how could John Gruden do this, and why would they leave him toiling in the wind? Look, dude, this is what happens everywhere. What do you think just happened in Green Bay? Mike McCarthy was there forever. Then Brian Gutekunst gets promoted to becoming the general manager. And suddenly Mike McCarthy's out of a job. Why is that? Because everybody wants to hire their guy. Duh. Doug Whaley was the general manager of the Buffalo Bills. They hire Sean McDermott from the Carolina Panthers. He comes in, Doug Whaley loses his job, and where do they go to get their general manager? The Carolina Panthers. Why? Because everybody wants to hire their guy. Dave Gettleman gets the job with the New York Giants, and suddenly they make a coaching change. Why? Because everybody wants to hire their guy. So the only thing that John Gruden did wrong was make a whole hell of a lot of money because he had an awesome job and get another job back in the NFL that he can't be fired from. Because that's the only reason you don't go back in the NFL. Hey, man, don't go back. NFL stands for not for long. They'll fire you. And John Gruden's like, well, what if I got a 10-year deal? Like, well, then you should go back. College coaches do the exact same thing. The media, who have never been in that sort of position of power, okay, in negotiations, don't understand. Like, man, he's got a $20 million buyout. Why? So that when he has a bad year, or he has, I mean, what happened to Cliff Kingsbury this year? Cliff Kingsbury went through five quarterbacks. Now, do I think Cliff Kingsbury is the greatest head coach ever? Probably not. Hasn't been able to figure out the defense, although it felt like they were really finally close to turning the corner, but whatever. The only reason he got fired this year was he only had a $4 million buyout. Coaches make these ridiculous salaries, have these ridiculous buyouts for one reason and one reason only. So you can't fire them when they have a bad year. That's it. You can't fire them when they have a bad year. Because they want to unpack emotionally. They want to be able to recruit and go into somebody's home and go, look, I'm going to be there. Don't believe me? They got to pay me $20 million to not coach this team. And only Texas A&M will actually do that. So the world is, I know that we do this black and white analysis. Oh, it's a terrible trade for Gruden. Like, no, it's not. He got three first round picks for two players. It seems like a pretty damn good trade. He couldn't afford to keep Khalil Mack. And even with Khalil Mack, still not any good. Don't believe me? I have data right here. 2014, 32nd in points per game, 26 in sacks. That's Khalil Mack's rookie year. 22nd in points per game, his second year, 19th in sacks per game. 2016, they make the playoffs. They're 32nd in sacks per game. Khalil Mack, by the way, was defensive player of the year that year. It's a team game. John Gruden knows this, understands this, and it doesn't mean any disrespect towards Khalil Mack. Actually, more respect. No defensive player has ever been traded for two first-round picks ever. And so instead of watching the Cowboys win, the Bears win, going like, see, Gruden's an idiot, or going, you know what? Gruden got appropriate value. Maybe the Bears didn't overpay. Maybe the Cowboys didn't overpay, like the rest of the league thought. Which brings us to the Dallas Cowboys, who won again. And Dak Prescott somehow becomes a conquering hero. In the black and white analysis. He wins, throws three touchdown passes, all to Amari Cooper, and two of which, the one that should have been intercepted at the end, wasn't a dime, but two of which were absolute dimes. Trent Dilfer, Dilfer's Dimes, joins us 5 minutes in the show, coming up in the show. Absolute dimes, seeds, man-to-man coverage, put it where only his wide receiver could catch it, and he never had to break stride. They were perfect. How was he the first three quarters? Horrible. Okay? But he's not a horrible quarterback, and he's not a great quarterback. And the difference between good and great, and Dak is good, fine, not great. It's not that he can't, it's not like Tim Tebow where he physically can't throw a football accurately. It's the percentage of times in which he makes the right read, the right throw, and delivers it in the right place. The best of the best of the best do it at a higher percentage of time than everybody else. He's somewhere towards the middle of the pack. But we don't want to do that. We want to either Dak is a franchise quarterback or he's a bum. And the truth is, he's somewhere in between. Meanwhile, Jason Garrett knows this. That's why he has a defense that keeps him close, an offense that needed one more weapon. And oh yeah, by the way, they're on their way to winning the division, getting to the playoffs, and all of the idiots on TV and radio that said he only has his job because he's friends with Jerry Jones. Hey, guess what? It's a good idea to be friends with your boss. By the way, happy birthday to my boss, Scott Shapiro. He turns 36 or 37 today. I really have no idea how old he is. But Boy Wonder is becoming a man, and we'll see if his Vikings can get a win on Monday Night Football. The reason Jason Garrett's a really good coach is because he's found a way to win with different groups of talent, different styles. Would you like to run the oop-de-oop that Kansas City's running? Sure, but you know what he doesn't have? He doesn't have Tyreek Hill. He doesn't have Pat Mahomes. He doesn't have, you know, Travis Kelce. Yeah, people want him out to be a bum. Or he wants to be the next Lombardi or the next Tom Landry. The truth is, he's somewhere in the middle and probably to the upper half. That's why they've only had one bad year, and that bad year was when Tony Romo kept getting hurt. And they had no good backup.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's ask Trent Dilfer. He's won a Super Bowl. You can follow him on Twitter at Dilfer's Dimes. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Look, every time Sean McVay's team loses, he has these great expressions where he takes all the blame and casts none of it on the players. I'm just wondering if there's any cause for concern considering how poorly Jared Goff and the offense looked against that Bears defense.
Well, I think there's cause for concern if they don't address it, if you don't learn from it. And you know this as a competitor, that there's nothing wrong with having a stinker if you grow from it. It's when you get defensive, you're not self-aware, you're not willing to look in the mirror at why it happened. That's when it becomes a problem. And I think for the Rams, the narratives, because the low-hanging fruit is cold weather, Jared Goff has small hands, California kid, Cooper Kupp. I get, and they're all reasons. I'm not diminishing them, but they're just things that are realities that you can correct. Jared Goff can learn how to play better in cold weather, and he did. He played like crap. I'd be the first to say that. And he looked uncomfortable. He looked cold. He had a hard time loading the ball backwards. As he took it back, that's where a heavy, cold ball, that's where it affects you, is when you take it back, you feel like you're going to lose your grip, and you can see the difference in his release. But you know what? Mitch Trubisky struggled with it too, so he hasn't fully learned how to play in cold weather. But you learn through that. They'll adjust to losing Cooper Kupp. I would assume they're going to learn to play more of the two tight end package, which they did a little bit at the end of the game when they had some success. They'll coach better. All those things are correctable. To me, the biggest thing that came out of last night was it was the first time the Rams weren't able to dictate terms
right. Offensively.
Right. And let me explain. And Chris did a nice job trying to explain how they're dependent upon the run game and run sets up play action and yada, yada, yada. But to drill down a little deeper, it's this simple. The Rams dictate terms because they force you into personnel groupings and don't allow you to substitute. And within those personnel groupings, they then force you into two different types of coverage cells, a two-high coverage cell or a one-high coverage cell. When they get you where they want you, they throw or pass based on what shell you're in. So they're controlling the terms of the game. Make sense?
Yeah.
What the Bears can do defensively is they don't get out of their two-high shell.
Right.
They can control the run game with their front seven, not recruit extra players in. So Sean then fell victim to calling plays against two-high shell defense, and it wasn't working, and it got them all out of sorts.
See, can I give you the basketball analogy to that?
Yep.
Okay, so this is the interesting part about the Warriors. When they get DeMarcus Cousins, when DeMarcus Cousins becomes available, right? They have always, when they've won these championships, they've always gone small to win championships. And what that means is, offensively, Draymond Green, kind of a non-shooter, non-scorer, but he can play out high and handle the basketball. And maybe you have Andre Iguodala, who can also be a cutter, but more of, he's a guard. But because they can match up to you defensively with that size and with that length, you have to match them playing small. You can't play big because they'll simply use Draymond as a screener, and now you have your center guarding Steph Curry, which is a bad matchup, right? That's what they would do with Kevin Love. They'd make Kevin Love guard the basketball, and only one time in Game 7 did he stop Steph Curry, and that's why they won a championship. Well, now you got DeMarcus Cousins, and Cousins is a center. If you play him at the end of a game, that changes the spacing of the floor offensively, but defensively, it's a second guy in addition to Steph Curry you can attack. So maybe they won't be able to dictate terms either. There's some similarities in the basketball and the football analogy. Fair?
Totally fair. And a lot of what I've learned from football is because I started playing basketball at a young age. I was a better basketball player than I was a football player. And I don't have close to the acumen that you have, but I understand the space, the matchups, the movement patterns. All that stuff is very, very transferable to football.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I did a Bears game earlier this year, and I talked to some of their front office guys, and they love Mitch Trubisky. Like, man, we had to get Trubisky because we had Cutler before, and everybody hated Cutler, the personality. And Trubisky's got just the greatest way around the guys. And I was like, that's great, but you could have had Mahomes, right? And they're like, well, Mahomes would have played earlier. It might have been a disaster. We know he has a higher ceiling, but we love. Is Trubisky good enough, in your opinion?
I'm good enough to play at that defense and that play caller. They have a special thing on defense. I'm not going to say they're the 85 Bears, the 2000 Ravens, even the 2002 Buccaneers. They're not that kind of good. That kind of good defense will never happen again just because the rule changes and the amount of good quarterbacks in the game. But they're – Vic Fangio, when he gets the right people, plays the hardest scheme in football to play against. And he has – go back to Vic Fangio. This is all I could think about last night was I was very close to those 49er teams because everybody knows I don't hide it. I'm very good friends with Trent Baalke. He was the GM. Knew Harbaugh really well, like was very close to those teams. And Vic was the secret sauce of those back-to-back-to-back NFC championship teams. Jim had a boring-ass offense, not that creative offensively. They were never good, very good offensively. But Vic ran an awesome defense, and Baalke got him studs. Patrick Willis was already there through Scott McLuhan, who roamed the middle. They have those two guys in Roquan Smith and Trevathan. He had the two edge guys, so the best edge guys in football, Maude Brooks, Alden Smith, two game wreckers. He has those two guys in Chicago with Mack and Floyd. He had Justin Smith, who was one of the best defensive interior linemen in the last 20 years in football, and he has that with Hicks. And he had guys in the back end that were really good eyes on quarterback, zone players that had man abilities. That's exactly what the Bears have. I mean, it is a snapshot of what he had. I mean, it's a replica, of what he had in San Francisco. And when you give Vic Fangio these pieces, it's going to be really hard to move the ball against his defense. It's going to be really hard to score points, especially in critical moments. I say all that because anybody can play quarterback if you don't turn the ball over. Mitch needs to quit turning the ball over. He doesn't have to be a superhero. he's fine being a pick and stick scramble guy, and that's what he is. He's a talented kid that can throw accurately to number one, and if number one's not there, he's athletic and big enough to go get some sneaky yards with his feet. They're never going to put up a bunch of points consistently. I don't think they're going to be, as the season grows on and people write the book as they're writing it on Mr. Trubisky, they're not going to be dynamic like the Chiefs. But he's good enough. I think the Cowboys and the Bears are kind of the same team. That if they play their formula and they get people in their place, they have similar style quarterbacks, similar style defenses, and they're going to make it a really tough game deep into the fourth quarter. I think eventually neither one of those are enough to beat Drew Brees and the Saints or even the Rams if it's in L.A., but it's pretty darn good.
It's a great, great point here. Here's what I said to open the show. I was like, look, we want black and white analysis. We want me. If I say Mitch can't play, well, that's not accurate. Mitch can play. Or, you know, if you watch Dak, right? He's terrible the first three quarters. Then he throws a couple of seeds to Amari Cooper. Like, the truth is somewhere in the middle. And trying to find a way in which you can hide the bad stuff or get through the bad stuff so the good stuff comes out, that's more realistic analysis when we're pushed with just how we're pushing the media today to he can play, he can't play. Good trade, bad trade, there is no in-between when the truth is in between. Fair?
Doug, that's why I do your show. I say no to 35 shows a week. I do your show. Why? We've been friends forever, but you don't do black and white analysis. You go against the grain. That's why I love this week, this 20 minutes every week.
I talked to
my point. Let me get back to my point, though, because it's really, really an important point for your listeners, is that if you're looking for black and white analysis on the NFL, you just want to be part of the lowest common denominator. You just want to win some stupid water cooler argument that is unwinnable. The answer is both. In sports, in football, whatever, the answer is usually both. It's like politics. The crazy right's wrong, the crazy left is wrong. Both are wrong and both are right on some things.
Sports is a microcosm of that, right? It's a snapshot of that.
Exactly. And if you want to actually learn how to enjoy watching football more, then be willing to kind of see both sides of it. And that's what any good analysis is going to be, is seeing both sides of it. I could see how the Bears could win the Super Bowl, and I can see how they can't. And I can give you reasons for both. And so can other good analysts. And that's kind of what this comes down to, is I think Patrick Mahomes is crazy. But I was asked this morning if he's the best. I said, I'm not going to dumb down my answer to that. Because as soon as I say he's the best, what am I saying about Drew Brees and Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Philip Rivers?
I mean,
you know, things that are good about both.
I talked to an NFL GM last night. He was coming home from his game. I was talking to him on the phone. And I said, did you see the Mahomes pass? He said, I actually did. He was talking with his quarterback coach, and he's like, I never actually seen that done before. Never actually, like a no-look crossing route on the money in an NFL game. Now, you know, people, you take it with a grain. You take it in the spirit that I think most people, when people called you a game manager, but you wouldn't have been drafted as highly as you were drafted coming out of Fresno State unless you could play. You've coached some of the best of the Elite 11 camp. How many times have you seen a guy throw a no-look crossing route in a game before?
Favre. I've seen Favre do everything Mahomes has done. And I'm as enamored as Mahomes as anybody. People just, I guess it's just too long ago, 95, 6, 7, or 6, 7, 8, when he won the three MVPs. Brett Favre did everything Patrick Mahomes has done, and he did it in 8-degree weather in Lambeau Field. So what we're seeing isn't new, but I've only seen one other guy do it. Now he's doing it. The cool thing about Mahomes, he's doing it in this like high-octane, hybrid Saturday offense thing, which is just awesome to watch, where Brett did it more conventional, old-school, West Coast pro-style offense. I've seen Brett doing a game. I've seen guys do it in practice. We goof around with it in practice with high school kids. It's not the fact that he's physically able to do it. It's the fact that he actually did it in the game when the game was on the line is amazing. I love the kid. He's must-see TV. He's on my big screen. I got five TVs. He's in the middle every week.
There was a little bit of humble brag there. I do have a question, though, that goes with that. Okay? Now, Andy Reid has been criticized for these second half collapses in playoff games, even at home. So part of how he plays runs counter to Andy Reid and his relatively conservative nature when he gets a lead in the playoffs. I saw he made a couple, he made another throw where he's rolling to his left, throws it back to his right, and somehow gets it there. But my question becomes, when it gets 10 degrees colder and the competition is a little bit better, do those throws that leave our jaws on the floor, a lot like Favre? What was the last throw Favre made in the playoffs for the Vikings? Across his body in New Orleans, right? Gets picked off. And the Minnesota Vikings announcer is like, how could you do that? How could? Because he's Brett Favre. That's what he's done. Does Mahomes' talent ultimately write a check that his body can't cash?
Oh, you stole my line. Yes. I'm a believer in that. I Brett Favre is the greatest single talent I've ever seen play quarterback, and they should have won 3 Super Bowls. And they won one, because the same thing that makes you laugh makes you cry. And I have this sick feeling in my stomach the same thing is going to happen to the Chiefs. Not sick, not that I'm rooting for them, but I kind of would like to see that change. I would kind of like to see a guy just play by the hair of his chinny chin chin and make these crazy plays and take them all the way to the Super Bowl. But history will tell you that the Tom Brady's of the world, the guys that mitigate risk, the guys that play the percentages, the guys that are more scientific and surgical with their approach, are the guys that will finish this race. Drew Brees, when he won a Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers, the streak he went on, even Joe Flacco, the hot streak he went on when they won the Super Bowl. It was precision based. It wasn't playmaking based. I think Patrick has it in him, and I think at one point in his career he'll learn that. But right now he's a butcher, not a surgeon. He's the best butcher in the history of the world, but he's not a surgeon. And typically, well, history will tell us that the surgeons prevail.
Doug,
that's just what history teaches us.
Okay. I get having somebody tall in to bat the ball down. But unless Ryan Tannehill has a howitzer that's replaced his right arm, why was Rob Gronkowski even in the game? Like, there's a bunch of other things that went wrong in order for the Dolphins to pull off this miracle, which hell might put them in the playoffs. But poor Rob Gronkowski looked like Bill Walton with the Celtics at the end of his run, where just no legs, trying to move laterally was painful to watch. I guess he's in there to bat a ball down, but they're not going to throw it 70 yards in the air. Why was he in the game?
Yeah, I mean, there's one, it's a miracle. One, the odds, the astronomical odds against it working. Everything had to go right for the Dolphins, or they had to go wrong for the Patriots, and it did. Yeah, I don't know why he's in there. I heard Bill Belichick's comments this morning. It's tough to argue with anything Bill says. But I think this. I think any time you get passive in your approach at the end of games, it comes back to bite you. And not just the passive alignment. If you go back and watch the play, there's like 4 defenders that have a chance to go attack the ball. And if they just attack the ball, whether they get the tackle or not, it's going to disrupt what eventually happened. And then it culminated in Gronk. The biggest part is he just makes the most unathletic move at the end of the play that allows him to actually get in. But so many things happened before that that were passive in nature, that if they were aggressive and they attacked, it never even gets back to Gronk. So there's, I mean, again, like anything, there's a lot of layers to it. I think they easily could have thrown, they could have 9 guys on the field and they still could have probably stopped this play from happening if they were aggressive.
Okay, so I think the Colts exposed the Texans as being not total frauds, but not nearly what a 9-game win streak would tell you. You look at the teams they've beaten, and not a lot of strong teams. Of course, they beat the Cowboys, which looks like a better win now, but that was a 50-50 game that they won in overtime on basically one completion. What's your level of buy-in to the Houston Texans now that we've seen Indy go down there and beat them?
Well, they were this. I have the same buy. Yesterday doesn't really affect me. I have the same buy into the Texans. I have the Bears and the Cowboys. I think they're very similar teams with a better quarterback play, and probably not as good as defense. But they have that defensive front that can disrupt you. They are a low margin of error team. They've won the majority of their games in last possession type situations. They play you to the end. They do a lot of little things well. They definitely have holes, but they can mask those holes if they play complementary football. They're a team that's, here's how I would say it in the AFC. They're not one of the best teams in the AFC, but they can play the best of any team in the AFC. They can make a lot of noise and even finish this thing and get to the Super Bowl if they play their best. But they have a low margin for error because they have probably more holes in the back half defensively. Offensive line is a hole, so they have to play a very certain style of offense. But they have playmakers. They, in the positions you really want to have dynamic players, quarterback, wide receiver, defensive line, they have those positions. They have those guys. So that alone, to me, makes them a contender, but they have to play their very best.
TD, you're the best, man. Appreciate the compliments. More importantly, I appreciate you coming on our show every week. Thanks so much for educating us.
I love her, bro.
See you. All right, that's Trent Dilfer at Dilfer's Dimes on Twitter. Of course, Elite 11 is the camp that he runs. And, of course, Tua was there. Kyler was there before they became Heisman Trophy winners. Trent Dilfer, Super Bowl champion, joins us every week on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Take a listen to Sean McVay, who's a little bit robotic and does answer things after loss the exact same way, but listen to some of the things he says within his answers.
A lot more times than not, you know, they've made me right on some bad play calls earlier this year where they end up making great plays. But this was a good defense. They did an outstanding job. You can see why they are one of the best, if not the best defense in the league. And really, it's going to be something until you go back and look at it. It's really tough to say. But I know this. When I'm looking at it in terms of some of the intent, what we were trying to get done on a lot of things, I know this. I know I did not put our guys in good spots. And that's something that I have to be better for within the framework of my role and what I can control.
Yeah, he always takes the blame. Hey, that's my buck stops here. Look, at some point he'll coach long enough to where it'll become super transparent to people, but McVay offers us nothing. When things go wrong, he takes the blame. When things go right, he gives away it's all about our players stepping up and making plays. Ramos, am I right?
You are correct, sir.
If I'm lying, I'm dying. So does that change how I feel about the Rams? No. Not really. Nope. I mean, look, the miracle finish in Miami could screw up the entire playoff picture. This is what happened last year. People forget, history repeats itself. Last year, all of the losses the Chargers had, and by the way, I think the Chargers have found their kicker with Michael Badgley. You see, he made the longest kick in Chargers history. He made a huge 49-yarder to seal the win, made one right before the break as well. All of the losses that the Chargers took because of their kicking game and the late collapse by the Baltimore Ravens put the Titans and the Bills in the playoffs. If that doesn't happen, the whole playoffs are different. The Titans and the Bills were not really playoff teams. But because they get in, and then if you remember what happened with the Tennessee Titans? They go and play in Kansas City, didn't they? Didn't they get a win in Kansas City? Came from behind, end up winning a playoff game against Kansas City Chiefs because that's what the Kansas City Chiefs do every year. Can't spell choke without Kansas City. Anyway, I look at the Dolphins. That Dolphins loss yesterday will change somebody being in the playoffs who is rightfully a playoff team, whether it's a team like the Colts. Remember, the Colts gave away a tie to the Houston Texans early in the season. Then they went down and beat the Texans. The Colts are a better team than the Texans. Their record's not better, but they're a better football team. But they gave away a tie early in the year, and everybody's like, oh, you went for it, huh? You didn't get it. It was on your own 49-yard line, but you didn't play for a tie, even though a first down wouldn't have given you a win. But you went for it, and that was somehow smart. If the Colts don't get in, and the Dolphins do because of that play, kind of stuff that throws off the entire equilibrium to the playoffs. Somebody gets essentially a first-round bye playing against the Dolphins on their home field. That's what it is. Whereas the Colts come in on your home field, you're like, dude, they got Andrew Luck, and they got Eric Ebron, and they're pretty damn – they got Andrew Luck. He gives you a fighting chance. But my thoughts on the Rams are this. They're going to play the rest of their games either in L.A. or in the Dome. That's it. If Chicago had a better record, would I be scared to death? Hell yeah. If Green Bay had two losses, would I be scared of? Hell yeah. If the Philadelphia Eagles were really good this year and they had to go into Philadelphia, into that hornet's nest in the freezing cold, would I be scared? Hell yeah. And even though New Orleans has beaten them previously and could beat them straight up this year, they could beat them again. You know, New Orleans is the opposite of what the Rams are. The Rams line up in the same formation every time. Same thing every time and run a million different variations. Whereas the Saints line up in a different formation with a different group of players every time and sometimes run the same plays just trying to create a different mismatch. But whether they go to New Orleans or play in L.A., like Jared Goff looked terribly uncomfortable. My wife has been doing this thing, and I don't know if Ramos, your wife, does. Like, she grew up in Oklahoma. Oklahoma does get cold, super cold, windy or whatever, not like frigid. And then we were in Connecticut, and she did not like the cold weather of Connecticut. And so it's been like high 50s at night, and she's acting like our house is an igloo. She got like cranked up to like 68, 69. I'm like, who cares how cold it is? Put on some thick, fuzzy socks, and let's snuggle. But what happens is when you spend a year in L.A., 50 degrees gets cold. 40 degrees, you feel like you're in the Arctic. And 30 degrees, hell has officially frozen over. But the Rams aren't playing in hell the rest of the year. They're playing in L.A. I mean, they got the toughest game they have remaining is the Eagles at home next week. After that, Cakewalk City. So, am I a little bit bothered that Jared Goff, when forced to win a game, can't? Sure. Same problem as last year. Do I think they miss Cooper Kupp? Yep. I do. He was better than his replacement, Josh Reynolds. But they're all pro kicker, missed an uncharacteristic field goal, probably because it's freaking cold. Their young quarterback, who grew up in warm weather, always plays well in warm weather and doesn't like cold weather, played poorly because it's cold. And they lost to a really good team with a really good front seven by 9 points. So I'm supposed to freak out here, but the realist in me says, don't have to go to Chicago anymore. Thank God.